Good evening, White Sox fans. The date is December the 10th, 2025. And this is the latest edition of Hot Takes and Heaters. My name is Danny Miller. My host, as always, is the gentleman you see on your screen. And if you're listening in podcast form, we'll be in your ear this evening. As always, Jacob Thome. How you doing, Jake?
We're hanging in there.
Yeah. Man, I hope we're doing more than hanging in there. But yeah, that's true. It has been a very exciting last couple of days here for anybody who's a White Sox fan. We have already got a bunch of chatters in the room. I kind of expected that this evening. Quick shout out to Elijah and Dylan, who were just on about 20 minutes ago. Man, they did a really quick piece to kind of help put all this together for you guys. We're probably going to run over some of the same ground, but we're gonna add some of our own interesting ideas as well, I believe. So stay tuned for that. But before we get into anything, and I'm going to make this quick because we do have a lot of White Sox stuff to talk about, but I just want to make an introduction. We had a new addition to the Miller family household. And I know everybody's been introduced to Nugget, but this is Nugget's little sister, Niblet. So I just figured I'd bring her on for just a second. She's 9 weeks old from the same breeding pair. And she's absolutely gorgeous, and we're already in love. So, yeah, she is her full-on blood sister. And they're getting along great. We picked her up Monday night, so I'm going to go ahead and hand her off to my wife, and we're going to go ahead and get right into some White Sox content. So, man, I don't even know if exciting is the right word to use right now. It's more than that to me. And it's unfortunate that it's happening right now to, be in the second week of December, and the GM meeting's pretty much wrapping up today, and at least the big main events. I know the GMs are probably still hanging out down there in Orlando and talking some things out and whatnot, but the big events are over. And the unfortunate part is it's only the second week of December. This may be the most exciting thing that we as White Sox fans have to talk about until spring training starts, unless Chris Getz and Mike Shirley and those guys kind of come together and throw a surprise at us. I'm not really expecting anything huge, right? So we'll probably get a couple of more arms to fill some spots on the roster. There's a couple of open 40-man spots as we speak. But wow, dude, what say you about the events of the last couple of days?
Yeah, it's crazy. So obviously I'm sitting in my studio at work and just kind of, watching this whole thing go on. And as soon as I saw the Twins at 3, I had a pretty good idea that Sox had a pretty good shot at 1. Just because the Rays had such a little chance to move all the way up. And then sure enough, they get announced as the number one pick. So not only that, but I think in terms of the way the lottery went, it went pretty well. I mean, you consider, the Twins dropped 1, which is good. And then also the Royals, who did jump but ended up at 6. And I think there's 5 really good prospects. And then it is a drop off at 6. And I mean, we still have the spring to go. And so, there'll be some movement here. But that's kind of the current outlook on things. But yeah, what a moment for the White Sox. And as soon as, I had a good feeling about it as soon as Baines was announced as the guy who was going to be there. I don't know, the last number one overall pick, and he was there, and then Rick Hahn jumped on the screen, and I was like, well, this would be fun. We got in front of him, and
I was like, please don't jinx it. Please don't jinx it with Rick. You see Harold come out of there, and you're like, all right, Harold's going to be the guy to get it done, and especially since it's never been done that the team with the highest odds since the inception of the draft lottery has actually gotten the number one pick. So, hey, thanks. Hey, Elijah checking in. Again, like I said, these guys put on a fantastic last-minute show just about 20, 25 minutes ago or so. If you haven't checked that out and you're listening to us right now, go ahead and go back and check out the recording. They threw a lot of really great information out there. I stuck around for that while I was cooking dinner. So, But yeah, man, Rick Hahn coming on made me nervous. But dude, the first time that any team since the inception of the MLB draft lottery to get the number one pick with the highest odds.
Yeah.
Time since 1977 that the White Sox are picking number one overall, and they bring in their Hall of Fame right fielder in Harold Baines to get the job done. And oh, I got to tell you, buddy, I was beside myself. I was absolutely beside myself. And the first thing, and I know it's been brought up a few times already in the chat. The first thing that crossed my mind was welcome home, Rock.
Yeah, right.
You know, we've seen all the hashtags, you know, rock bottom, rock hard, rock and roll. I mean, however you want to put it out there, there's a pretty much a consensus is this is the clear cut number one overall pick at the moment, right? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's still a spring to go, right? You never know how this thing's going to work. Somebody can get injured. I really like Emerson. I think those two, you know, in a draft full of so much talent, it's rare to get kind of these tiers, but I think, you know, you have Rock and then you have Emerson, and then there's a tier where you have Burris, LeBron, and Lombard, and then I think there's another tier after that. But yeah, I think there's a little bit separating those two right now for sure. I would, again, not a too big of a gap where I think, you know, you're kind of between a level where that can't be made up. But yeah, I think it's certainly rock tip for right now, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Yeah, absolutely. Quick shout out to Emiliano. Appreciate the super chat. He says between Rock and Billy, those two could easily be the best defensive third base shortstop combo since Brooke Robinson and Mark Bellinger. Dude, I don't know. What do you think, man?
Yeah, this is going to be the question. Where do they put everybody? Is, you know, for me, it's not a worry of if they're going to find the field. I think the bats are good enough between the four of them, and that being Carlson, Rock, Colson, and then, oh boy, forgetting the buddy man's name. But Bonomer, thank you.
Oh, Caleb Bonomer, there you go.
Yeah, so between those four, I think they're all going to make it. I think, you know, the issue is, the true issue is Colson is, last year, was a top five defensive shortstop since he debuted. So looking at July 4th on, he was a top five, depending on what you use, you know, outs above average or DRS, he was right up there. And so it's going to be hard to move him off of short. I think Carlson's a clear choice to be your shortstop once he's there. You know, I don't know, though. I don't know what that looks like for them. I don't know, you know, what the plan is. The way I would currently do it, if Rock's going to be the pick, I would put Billy at short, Colson at third, Rock at second, and Bonomer in left. But
yeah, I mean, it all sounds great, but the reality is a lot of these guys are nowhere near close to coming up anytime soon, right?
Yeah.
No, go ahead, please.
Rock looks like he's going to be probably 27 ready. Carlson, who knows, he's a prep shortstop. Obviously, Colson's already up, and then Bonomer, wherever you place him. Also, I'm kind of interested. So, Toss, who's always a great supporter, puts, I just want someone who is more ready. Emerson is only 17. I think that makes sense. Here's my counter argument to that. And I know James has talked against this for quite a while. If there is an extended lockout, would you rather have, and I don't know if this will play into it at all, but it's a fun road to go down. Is there a chance they take Emerson because he's only 17 over Rock because you'd be losing part of Rock's, I guess, prime, whereas Emerson, the year or two you'd be losing would be while he's still developing, and he could develop off the field instead of with your major league program.
Okay, so...
Or do you not buy into that much?
First off, I want to go back just really quick and say that I appreciate Emilio's comment, but that's big shoes to fill when we're talking about, you know, possibly the best third baseman in the history of baseball with Brooks Robinson. And, you know, at least a lot of folks will try to say that. They're, you know, it's up for debate, but whatever. As far as the impending lockout, let's just go ahead and say it. Like, there's next to a 0% chance that it's not going to happen. And whether or not it's extended is a whole nother issue, and how long it's going to go. But I think that with a pick like Rochkowski, and this is assuming that he doesn't get injured during this season of college ball, doesn't have some kind of, you know, slump, some extended slump where we're, you know, reassessing things. You know, like in the last show that Elijah and Dylan put together, you know, a lot can happen between now and July when the White Sox are, you know, on the board for the number one overall pick. There a lot of things can happen, right? That top five is pretty much a clear-cut top five as of right now, but guys can have some, you know, some weird things happen, some injuries. Things get shuffled around pretty quickly. We've seen draft boards change rather, you know, dramatically in the past with, you know, within a month or two of the draft, right? So it's not to say that we don't think that anybody's going to take over for Rock as of right now, especially since the White Sox have been looking at this kid through high school. But the one thing we do know about the White Sox, if the past is anything to teach us, is that they don't spend big on free agents. So if you have the opportunity to take what's thought to be generational talent, you kind of almost have to do that, because they're not going to, they haven't shown us any sign of going out and getting that outside of the organization. Right.
Yeah.
We look at, you know, all of the projected lineups for like 28 and 29 that have come out between Baseball America and Fangraphs and all this stuff. Not a single one of them has a free agent pickup on it, which is kind of typical because they're not going to try to predict what's going to happen in free agency with these things. But when you look at the system that White Sox are building, it kind of makes sense to think that they've taken on this philosophy of picking not just shortstops, but the best athletes that they can get their hands on at any given moment. Guys that can be moved around all over the diamond, guys that have good hit tools along with good defense. I don't think that you are going to pass up the opportunity to take somebody who's been touted as the best shortstop, you know, in the draft in the last 20 years or more. Yeah, I've heard the comparisons to Dansby Swanson, which, you know, fantastic, but there are other guys out there that have been picked in the last, you know, 10 years that I think he looks even better than, that may probably make better comparisons to, and I'm not going to throw a bunch of names out there, but it's very difficult to pass up on a guy like this unless something drastic happens, because it's the only way that we're going to be able to build our system and build our core and have that control for, you know, 5 or 6 years at a price that suits Jerry Reinsdorf and company. And we know it's going to be at least a few years before Ishbia takes over, and who knows what kind of, you know, money he's going to inject into that payroll. So what do you think?
Yeah. I mean, it's, I just, you know, there's so many different ways they could play this. You know, it's hard to pass up on a premier talent, like you mentioned. I mean, now I'm a guy who likes Emerson a lot. I think, you know, there's a potential that he's the number one pick this last year's draft as well. Depends on how you think about Grady Emerson. But, I mean, the thing is, they're taking a shortstop. Like, there's no way they go Burris, who's the only outfielder out of the top five. There's just 0% chance it happens. So it's going to be a shortstop regardless of who's picked. And so you just kind of got to figure it out from there. But, it's certainly a fun problem to have when you have so much talent up the middle.
Yeah. And again, it's about choosing an athlete, right? You're going to find the most athletic guy that you possibly can, because not all of these guys can play shortstop. And if you're looking to get bats in the lineup that are productive, you know, obviously you've got to find positions for those guys, which is why I really don't want to focus on who's moving where at the moment, because we're a ways off. Like, it could go any number of ways. I've heard, you know, Colson to first base, which I don't particularly see, but, you know, I've heard Colson to third base and, you know, Bonnemer to left field, Bonnemer to right field. I've heard, you know, every scenario that you can throw out there. And quite frankly, none of us really know how that's going to go until these guys, number one, they're not even drafted, right? You know, as in, right. In the case of Rock. Number two, how does their development go? What does it look like? How long does it take? Is there moves in the future? You know, we look at Chris Getz taking these guys and always looking to, you know, maybe turn one into three with high potential, right? I think as the rebuild moves on, we get a little bit further away from that and you start looking for finishing pieces. But right now, we're only in the early stages of what could be, a three more years or, you know, in as far as a rebuild goes before we're really putting that finishing touch on. You know, we're hoping it doesn't go that long. Obviously, it just depends on the way that, you know, the way the shoe falls. Yeah. When we're talking about making other moves, we're talking about maybe getting those finishing pieces in free agency over another team who might be, you know, bidding wars are going on. So it's very difficult to say where the positions are going to come from and who's going to play where. It's not really that important right now. The importance is that you've got some top-tier athletes that can play multiple positions, and you'll be able to find places for them and get those bats in the lineup. Really quickly, I want to shout out again Emiliano with another super chat. Much appreciated, dude. We really love the support. He asks, again, now this is going to what we were just speaking about with guys moving around positions, but he says, if Rock moves to third, he think David Wright, Evan Longoria. This infield is stacked. Ishby is signing Ronald Acuna Jr. in 2028. Dynasty incoming. I love the enthusiasm. But Acuna Jr. in 2028? What do you think about that? I mean,
dude's on his third ACL at this point. No, I mean,
we're giving Ishby some like early control of that that payroll, aren't we?
First off, I think, you know, when you look at the nice thing with the Sox, and I saw this a lot, is like on social media, everybody's like, oh, he doesn't want to go to the White Sox. Why would you not? You know, obviously we're going to be extremely biased, but like I think there's a ton of reason to want to go to the White Sox right now. For one, they've proven that they can develop talent. And then for two, you have Ishbia coming in. Like the nice thing about the Sox is, you know, Ishbia, if he takes over early as possible, he'll be 29. If he takes over in 29, you know, there's going to be you're going to have the ability to add into this team that should already be built with prospect talent. And is just going to need a finishing touch. Like I think Acuna, you know, like that's maybe a lofty goal, but I don't think it's insane. Like Ishbia has stupid amounts of trunks of money to spend on whatever he wants to. And obviously it'll depend on if he wants to spend on the Sox, but like there's proven he wants to spend. So if the nice thing is
he's going to have to spend on buying out some of the other ownership group.
I think he's already done that.
Anything. He's bought up a lot of it. He definitely has. I don't think he's bought up all of it, but he's bought up a lot of it.
I think he's close.
I don't know. If he did, I think that would probably put him as the majority owner already.
No, because I think it's Jerry owns 40, and then his son also owns 20.
So then Jerry was like in the 19% range there, 21% range, somewhere in there. I don't know anymore. Honestly, the reports are all over the place.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But no, I mean, he's got the money. And part of that's going to go through a new stadium that was leaked, a month ago when the Pope was asked about it. But no, yeah, I mean, like, there's going to be free agents where you can add into that payroll. And you're going to have the right owner to add into that payroll when this prospect group kind of comes along.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting for sure. I don't want to even think about the way free agency is going to go as of yet, just because of the simple fact that we actually do finally have a farm system that it's looking like it could be homegrown. We're not trading away guys. And, you know, nothing against the last regime. We all bought in. We've talked about this before. We all bought into the Rick Hahn era of, you know, trading away a bunch of our guys and getting what we thought were was fleecing other teams, right? You know, we heard that word thrown around a lot during the last rebuild. You know, oh, Hahn fleeced the Cubs. Hahn fleeced the Red Sox. Hahn fleeced the Nationals. And it was like, yeah, we have this huge pool of talent coming in from other teams, which very little of it kind of worked out, right? Now we have these guys that are coming directly into the White Sox organization. And as you brought up earlier in the show, we now have the ability, or at least seemingly the ability, to develop. We've seen a lot of changes on the staff side, and we've seen a lot of, I would say, results, even though it's early on into the new regime and the new staff and a new way of thinking and using technology and analytics with the White Sox. So it's going to be very interesting. I think there's going to come a point where you have to spend somewhere. But it's going to come down to, you know, what exactly are those holes when we get there? Are all of these guys going to hit? You know, we're sitting here talking about Rock Chulosky, who's, you know, again, probably a consensus number one right now, but we don't know. He's still not here. And two, do we know Bonnemer is going to hit? He has so far. Do we know that, you know, any number of guys? Is Brooks Baldwin going to acclimate better to the outfield now than he had last season? We saw him grow and leap some bounds in a short amount of time while learning a position on the fly. You know, is Miguel Vargas maybe going to take the next step? And does he become a first baseman that we can trust and rely on, or even a corner player until, or the other corner, the hot corner, until, you know, some of these guys get it figured out? Is Billy Carlson, like you said, prime guy who, you know, shows all the ability in the world? Things could change, you know, over the next couple of seasons. So the holes, it all sounds fine and dandy now, but the holes could appear in places we're not expecting later on. So, but let's talk a little bit about Rock, since we're on the subject and the whole world wants to talk about it. Have you done your homework on Rock Chulosky, Mr. Jacob Thome?
Yeah, 1,300 OPS and 23 home runs. I mean, that's kind of all you need to know, right?
Yeah, with a little bit of speed, for sure. Yeah. You know, I mean, pretty good defender. You know, not the biggest dude in the world at 21 years old, but probably still stands to put on a little bit of weight and a little bit of muscle. So maybe we see the power numbers get even a little bit better. I don't know. I'd rather not see him sacrifice his hit tool for more power, since we're already seeing him with power. What do you project? And I'm asking this on a, you know, on a Jacob Thome, not what the rest of the world sees. What does Jacob Thome see when he looks at Rock Chulosky? What do you project his ceiling to be?
I mean, Bobby Witt's the comparison. I think if you're going to throw a name, I don't think he's close athleticism wise. He's you know, fast. Bobby Witt's a different level of speed.
If he's not the fastest guy in the league, he's top five.
Right, right. Rock is not that fast, but he's not slow. He's just not that fast. But I think when you look at everything and being able to marry the hit tool with the amount of power that he's able to produce, the plus defense, I think Bobby Witt makes a lot of sense, which is insane. I mean, it's hard to compare a guy that high up. I mean, Witt was, what, third in MVP voting this year? But I think, like, if everything goes right, that's the type of player you're getting in Rock.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think I'll use the term possible generational talent, and it's very difficult to pass up on that kind of thing. Okay, outside of Rock Chulosky and Grady Emerson, do you have anybody else that you would like to at least keep an eye on, because, you know, let's be honest, if your scouting department and your general manager isn't doing their homework, they're not doing their job, right? We could say, we could sit here and say all day up and down that Rachalowski is the clear cut number one. But for shits and giggles, let's just say that, you know, and I don't want to wish this. I don't even want to, I hate even having to put out there. Let's just say there's a slump this season. I don't want to poo poo. I don't want to, you know, rain on his parade. Matter of fact, I hope he gets even better in this upcoming college season. But who other than those two guys would you like to possibly see in the White Sox organization come draft day?
Yeah, the name sucks. But Justin LeBron, I think, you know, when you look at the ability for a 5-2 player at short, I don't think he's got the power Rock has. I think that's pretty clear. But 6'2", 180, the speed is there. He's, again, I don't know if he's whip fast, but he's close. He really has a step athleticism-wise there. I think, you know, he's going to be a 5-2 player, which sucks because he's probably going to be a twin, unless the Twins mess that up. But, you know, just kind of looking at what the board would look like right now, he's probably going to the Twins. Again, LeBron is the last name in this city. Don't know about it. But he is a heck of a prospect. And, you know, as Toss has mentioned down here, Lombard's a good one there too. I think Lombard's a step down from LeBron, but yeah. And Burris too. I mean, you know, to talk about 3, 4, and 5, Burris makes sense. It's just the hit tool is concerning. I don't know if he's going to overcome that.
Yeah, I don't disagree. So now that we've kind of gotten through that stuff, let's talk a little bit about bonus pool money. It's been the big topic. I know, again, I hate to run over the same ground, but I'm going to throw some ideas out there that might be a little bit different than what Elijah and Dylan just did a little bit ago. But, you know, with the first pick comes the largest piece of the pie when it comes to bonus pool money, right? And the White Sox are going to have that pool of money. And we know typically that the White Sox are pretty good at getting guys under slot, right? It was mentioned in their show that the highest paid first pick ever was at $9.4 million. The White Sox are going to have, I think it's like 11.2, if I'm not mistaken, at the first slot. What range do you think, if it's Rock, what range do you think they're going to throw at him in bonus pool or in, you know, in his first pick contract? And do you think they will save on being slightly under slot? Or do you think he's going to break records quite handily?
He'll break the record. I don't know what the slot will look like. I would assume it's slightly under. College players typically are under slot. Obviously, when you're talking about a generational prospect, that kind of throws some stuff into that. I don't know what Skeens was. That would kind of be a good measure for I think what Rock will look like, because Skeens was kind of another generational type prospect. And I understand that, you know, Skeens and Cruz were both, I think, kind of touted as generational type prospects. But whatever Skeens looks like, I would assume that's what his deal will look like. The good news really is I'm really not worried about the Rays floating him, and I'm not worried about the Twins floating him. You have two poor organizations behind you, and I don't think the Giants at 4 are going to have enough to float. So I'm really not worried about the two organizations behind you floating him down. In fact, I think there's a chance that the Rays and the Twins go cheap and maybe pick up Burris. They might be two shockers, which would actually be unfortunate because I think then Kansas City might end up with a heck of a player. But so Skeens was a 9.2. So, yeah, whatever that kind of looks like, I would assume it's pretty kind of trackable. I don't know what the difference is with pitcher to hitter or whatever, but yeah, that'd be my guess.
Yeah. So I want to address this a little bit because I want to bring something up that maybe some folks aren't thinking about, but maybe you are. I don't know. But, you know, the White Sox are very good at, you know, throwing some overslot money at guys in later rounds, particularly prep players, to get them to, you know, commit to being in the White Sox organization and getting them a contract signed, which is awesome. So, and Elijah and Dylan brought this up a little bit earlier, but I also like the idea of the White Sox having some money to play with even in the earlier rounds, second and third round. Because what you're going to see happen is you're going to see some of these teams with smaller bonus pools pass up on guys that they possibly, you know, could have had a shot at, but they'd rather underslot to save a little bit of money later on, which means that there are going to be guys with some higher talent than their draft position in the second and third round. And this affords the White Sox the ability to actually get some high-end steals in the second and third round, right? Because guys are going to drop down the board a little bit when you've got these teams that don't necessarily have the money to throw at them to convince them to, you know, sign, right? If the White Sox have the ability to go over slot a little bit in the second and third round, we're going to see some pretty big picks come in those rounds as well too. This is huge, huge stuff when it comes to rebuilding your system. And we've already seen that this is a farm system that's on the rise. This draft could be one that is for the record books. And I believe honestly that Mike Shirley is the guy that, you know, we finally have the guy in place that we want doing this. Excuse me. I apologize. Do you have any thoughts on underslots and savings?
Me and Tosh on the same wavelength tonight. Landon Thome was going to be the guy, or Tomey, sorry, was the guy I was going to throw out. Obviously, the son of Jim. But those are the types of guys. So, like, Tomey is very in line with what Fauci was last year. So you start looking at, all right, where are these guys going to fall? And to bring up some more context, so last year, the Washington Nationals were able to move four prep guys down the board by giving them big bonuses. So, like, that's the type of – and obviously they had the first overall pick last year. Now, they went underslot with Willits. That was part of their plan. So I don't know if the White Sox can do the exact same thing, floating that many guys down the board. But they can float definitely in the second and third round and also pick up more prep guys to add along to their type of guys. And then obviously, you know, depending on what they want to do through rounds, you know, whatever, you know, 9, 10, if you would just want to take those college pitchers that are only going to take 10K, you know, that'll help as well. But yeah, they have the opportunity to move a lot of those prep guys down the board. And to compare it to last year's draft, like a Fauci, Matthew Boughton was another guy that they moved down the board. So like, those are the types of guys that you're looking for, in terms of prep guys and trying to buy them out of that college.
Yeah. And I mean, let's be honest, there was some concern that one or two of those guys may not actually sign. And the White Sox were able to get it done when it came time to sign some contracts. So, you know, kudos to what they're doing. And I do see a lot of that kind of same strategy playing into this year's draft as well. I think we're going to, you know, given again that they're going to have the highest bonus pool money. And, you know, it's funny, shout out to our very own James Fox, who put out a tweet yesterday that made me chuckle. And he thought it was funny that Jerry Reinsdorf is going to have to be the guy to throw out the most money during this year's draft class. But, you know, as funny as that is, again, I have to point out that this is the way that I think Jerry gets his generational talent. I think this is the way that, you know, he's more willing to throw some money around, because it's not, you know, 5 years, $250 million for some, you know, big swinging guy who's proven himself. He's got a guy who's touted to be possibly the next, you know, generational talent for basically pennies on the dollar at this point when you're in your rookie contract. So we'll see what the arbitration years bring for some of these guys. If they are who we think they can be, our beers are going to, you know, push the dollar amounts higher and higher all the time. But, you know, again, not we're not talking about earth-shattering, record-breaking, long-term deals. So, but I thought that was hilarious when James put that out there. So thank you, James, for that, if you're listening.
Yeah, real quick, I want to get in this just quickly. I did the math. So Skene signed for 9.2 on a pick that was worth 9.7. If you did the same exact percentage, it would be $10.4 million, which is
a right. Pretty, so you're looking at about – In the area of, you know,
a 600K, yeah, that you could float down the board.
Right.
It's a lot of money.
It is. When it, especially when we're talking about getting into the later rounds, that's huge.
Yeah.
I mean, even in the, you know, the third, fourth, fifth round, that's big, big time dollars that you can toss around in other places and make things happen. So, all right. You know what? I think that about covers the draft, unless there's anything you want to, you know, get into before we move on.
No, I think we're good.
All right. So when we talk about the last couple of days being exciting, right, it was actually probably, it was less than a 24-hour period where two of the best things happening in baseball happened, and that was the draft lottery and the White Sox obviously winning that first pick in the lottery. But also, we have less than 24 hours after that, we have the Rule 5 draft.
Yeah.
And before we get into who we got in the Rule 5 draft, let's talk about the one guy the White Sox lost, and that being Peyton Paulette.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What do you think... What are your thoughts on Peyton Paulette not being in the White Sox organization anymore?
It doesn't scare me. Here's the reason it doesn't scare me. For one, he was never going to get called up. I am so serious about this. I have had this opinion all day. He had 3 months last year to get called up. He could have got called. We were calling for him to get called up the last 3 months. Clearly the Sox know something. I trust the people in that building. Now, him going to the Guardians is an ideal. Obviously the pitching factory that they've got going over there, but like he had 3 months to be called up. They clearly never saw him as part of the future. They were never interested in whatever he was doing. And so they moved on from him and they made that choice and they didn't put him on the 40 man. Like it was very clear with what they were doing towards the end of the year and how bad the bullpen was that they, for some reason, didn't like him. Obviously, he is not, it's hard to say that he's not.
I mean, it wasn't they didn't call, they didn't even add him to the 40 man. So he doesn't get called up, and then he doesn't get added to the 40 man to be protected at the end of the season.
Yeah,
like it's a little bit of a nail. It's a thorn in your side to see him go to Cleveland. But to your point, they didn't do anything like at all to signal that they wanted him to be part of the future of the organization.
100%. In fact, I was more worried about them losing the other two, either Adams or Murphy, who I didn't think were as likely. Paulette made the most sense to go in the Rule of Five, but I was more concerned if they would have lost Murphy or Adams. I think higher of those two pitchers than I do Paulette. Paulette just, he could have been up here the last 3 months of the season, and they purposely chose not to move him up. Something is wrong in the White Sox eyes. I don't know if it's because he wasn't drafted by, although he was a Shirley pick. I don't know. I'm really not sure why, but there was something again that the front office had against him, and that I'm sure he's honestly glad to be out of this organization.
Yeah, you know, it makes me wonder, and I hope that we get some kind of answer here shortly. excuse me. This front office regime, pardon me. Give me one second here. I'm sorry.
You're good. All good. While Danny's dying, I will.
No, it's still something caught in my throat here. And let's keep it clean. This regime has been a little bit more forthcoming about decisions they have made, where, you know, as Rick Hahn regime, and then before Rick Hahn, when Kenny Williams was the GM before he became president, they played their cards close to their chest. The Chris Getz and company have been a little bit more open. So I'm kind of hoping that we get some kind of news as to why they let this happen. Because honestly, you know, like you said, we were calling for Peyton Pollett to come up last season. You know, the bullpen, especially in the second half, was just absolutely, it just looked like they were dead out there. You know, you had a team where the offense had kind of come to life and was playing much better ball defensively and offensively and putting some runs on the board. And we were losing games late due to just, you know, poor pitching. And a bullpen that was, it wasn't maybe not that it was bad. It just seemed like, you know, there was a time when we were down a couple of starters in the rotation and you had to use your bullpen. So they were worn out, right? And we thought Peyton Pollett, after, you know, going through his struggles as a starter in the minors, he found something. And what he found seemed to be pretty good. And nothing ever materialized as far as, you know, being called out to the MLB team. So I'm curious as to why. Again, it's not something that's, you know, overly it's not something to get worked up over. It's just a little perplexing. And like you said, there's got to be a reason. It seems as though that reason's been in place for a while. And I would just like to know what it is.
Yeah.
I would just like to know what it is, but all right. Well, we might as well get into this really quickly before we move on. Toss wants to know, what do we think about Merck mentioning the Pete Fairbanks and the possibility of the White Sox signing a closer? You got any thoughts on that, Jake?
I have thoughts about him and one other. I don't know if we'll have time to get to the other. So Fairbanks makes a lot of sense for them. Reynolds is the, like, biggest question with him. Doesn't pitch well in the cold. Has the disease. That's like, you know, that's an issue. It's cold here. So I don't know how that's going to work. But as a if you throw that out of the world, makes a ton of sense. Good closer. I mean, as a guy with, you know, the stuff coming out of there, out of the winter meetings has been that they want to add to the bullpen and want to add someone who has high leverage experience, and he surely has it. So it'd be a good signing. I don't know if they get him just because of Reynolds, but yeah, interesting player.
I don't hate it. I don't hate it, but I feel like the timing's off. Really, honestly. I mean, are we in a position? Would it be awesome to see a closer? Would it be awesome to see the White Sox finish out some games that, you know, last year we had a ton of 1 and 2 run losses that maybe could be prevented by having a solid back end of the bullpen? Sure, it'd be great. You know, you might go from 60 wins to 70 plus just by doing that kind of thing, right? But it just doesn't feel like the right time to even worry about that kind of thing, especially now. And we're going to get into the other – this is a great transition, actually, for the other Rule 5 picks that the White Sox picked up today. But you just scooped up a couple of really young arms that you're going to have to find time for, right?
Yeah.
And then you've got young arms already in the system that you're going to have to find time for. I don't know that it makes that big of a deal. We don't really expect the White Sox to just come out and be world beaters and make the playoffs this year.
Yeah.
So it sounds fun. It's extremely interesting, you know, even if it is a 4 or 5 year deal, I don't know if that's great either. It might put him on the team in the window of, you know, real contention for this ball club. But at the same time, pitching's volatile, especially bullpen pitching. So I don't know if that's necessarily the best case for us. But we'll see how it works out. Maybe it's one of those sign and flip deals. He comes out, he has a really good first half. You flip him for something else. I don't know. That's the only way I see that working.
I mean, I think they could add a closer. I don't hate it. I don't know if Fairbanks is the guy. Like, Kenley Jansen to me is the guy that, like, makes it more sense for them. And that's not the name I was going to bring up, but I don't know if we'll have time to do it. But,
go ahead. Throw it out there really quickly.
Okay, so I wanted to talk about this, but I know we have a ton. So Boris was on this, like, bizarre, like, winter meetings thing where he was, like, becoming a poet. And this is what he said.
I saw this.
So Boris is asked about Bellinger, and he said, it's not for me to judge, but great players see red if they have to a big bat yanked out of their lineup. I haven't met a team that Dodgers a five-tool player to fill the center field. Anyway, pretty much what he's doing is he's interning a bunch of teams into, like, a poem. But he does mention this. To fill the center field need is a giant step towards the playoffs. North and South outfielders that fly with power. North and South is interesting because there's no other team that makes sense other than Sox and Cubs. So is Boris leaking that the Sox are potentially interested in Bellinger? Because that is a bizarre free agent signing, and I don't know. It technically makes sense because they need a first baseman and they could also use him in the outfield, but, like, that seems way ahead of schedule. I'm interested to see that they, I would assume, made a call. I mean, that was kind of what I would assume is leaked, is that they've at least checked in with Boris on Bellinger, but, like, that seems like an insane free agent for them to go and out target.
I see. Here's the thing. I don't know that they've checked in on him. I think it's more Boris goading the Cubs than it is the White Sox checking in on Bellinger. I think that's him calling the Cubs out.
You think so? I was reading that and I was like, North and South, like, that'd be a bizarre free agent. But
I mean, let's be honest. You know, we all know. It's no secret that this guy is always up to something, you know, and we could talk about who leaked what to the media, and he'll never claim that it was him, but by God, he's got mouthpieces out there leaking things for him, and you can see right through it when it happens, pushing his agenda. The guy's a cancer for baseball. I don't care if you're a player that is represented by him. He's an awful, awful, just needs to go away piece of MLB baseball. But I think the reality is he likes to play the game. And I think this is just his way of going at Hoyer and company and kind of letting them know, like, their fan base is obviously not happy. They didn't make any moves at the deadline last year, even though they went from being super hot early in the season to kind of struggling and falling on their face and coming back up and then falling again. And, you know, the whole world likes to think that the Cubs should have done something. And I believe that their front office is feeling a lot of heat right now. And, I mean, let's be honest. If you turn on, you know, any radio station, I mean, you happen to be part of a sports show on a radio station. You are a host of your own, by the way. So if you guys don't get a chance to check that out, check out Jake on Decatur Radio. His live show is what, 4 to 5? 5 to 6.
No, now it's noon to 1.
Oh, change time.
I'm now on a talk radio station. Doing sports still, but it just got kind of switched up. I'm trying to get me in a different demographic. Yeah. A long story that we do not have time for, but
hey, either way, if you turn on sports radio here in Chicago, it's very hard to miss. I mean, the callers call in constantly, and they are just absolutely berating the Cubs front office for not doing anything the last couple of years, really, in the second half of the season. So, to me, that's just him playing the game. I don't think that means anything to the Sox. Maybe he's trying to suggest that, you know, Luis Robert Jr. is as good as gone and the White Sox are going to need a center fielder. I don't know. But I wouldn't buy into it too much, dude.
I thought it was bizarre that the Sox had even been mentioned in that.
Do you honestly think that the Sox are in a position to hand out a
No, that's why I thought it was bizarre that I was like, I read that and I was like, wait a minute. Is that what? No, I thought that'd be quite fun.
And then there is, you know, the qualifying offer, like Toss says, which you know, we're now you're losing compensatory picks. Is that it? You'll yeah, whatever.
I don't know.
Can't be picks. How about that?
Can't picks, yeah. There you go.
Anywho, you know, it is what it is. I don't read into that stuff too well, but I'm glad you brought it up. I needed a good laugh.
I thought it was funny.
Well, you know, Boris, for what he is, the I'm just going to say it, the jerk off that I think he is, you know, has his moments where he can make you laugh. Sometimes he's being dead serious and he makes me laugh because, you know, how ridiculous his seriousness can be. But that's for another show.
Yeah.
All right. So really quickly here, I guess we can get into, and I don't really want to spend a ton of time on these guys, but the White Sox did pick up a couple of guys in the MLB portion of Rule 5 today. And we'll just go ahead and start with their first pick. The second of the first round of the Rule 5 draft today. White Sox get the second pick. They pick up, let me see, was this, if I can pronounce this right. His last name, I hope, is Paez.
It's Jedickson almost like Paez. Paez, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's Paez, but Jedickson. Jedickson, I don't know. Who knows? You know, X is weird in Spanish. So, like, you know, it can sound like an SH or a Z or an X or whatever. But we'll go with Jedickson for now. Until we get the media guide and how to pronounce it. You have thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think, you know, listen, Sox fans are extremely spoiled. And I wanted to bring this up because I thought it was a good talking point. These were the players that were picked last year in the Rule of Five draft, not ended up White Sox. Liam Hicks, Garrett McDaniels, Noah Murdock, Evan Reifert, Angel Bastardo, Cooper Bowman, Nathan Lavender, Eberson Castellano, Gage Workman, White Sox legend, Anderson Pilar, Juan Nunez, Connor Thomas, and Christian Cairo. If you could tell me where one of those players plays, I would be shocked. The Rule of Five doesn't turn out to be anything special. It just happened that the White Sox ended up with their two best players. You can find good talent in the Rule of Five. I think it's a big part of potentially trying to go out and get some of these good players. I don't hate the White Sox perspectives. I think there's an interesting part here where Paez is now the 15th best prospect on MLB Pipeline in terms of the White Sox top 30, ranking ahead of Jacob Gonzalez and behind Gage Zeal, who, if you remember, was traded in a pretty big deal there. So he's got a ton of talent. The command is insane. Like 3% walk rate is absolutely nuts. I think that makes him easier to transfer to the MLB level because at least the command is good. If the stuff can play at any level, I don't know if it will. If you can get something out of the stuff and he can get some sort of whiff with that kind of control, I see the vision. I don't know if it'll work. I think best term, he plays this entire year with the Sox and then is sent down once Rule 5 clears. I don't know, but I don't hate the shot. I think it's worth it to get him to spring training and see what you got.
Yeah, so I will kind of mirror part of that by saying taking a shot is a good thing. Yeah. And I think that's what most people who have any real knowledge of how Rule 5 works are going to say. They're taking a swing at a guy who's got high upside potential, right? They love guys with command. The only other guy, and I had planned on talking about this in this way pretty much all day, and then I watched our guys come on our show about an hour earlier than us, and they basically made the same comp to Mason Adams. You know, just really awesome command and control. My issue with Paez is kind of twofold here. One, not ever pitching above high A. That leaves a lot of room to be desired. And, you know, not seeing the level of competition and the level of bats that you're going to see at the major league level is I mean, it could be light years difference, right? The other thing is he hasn't really thrown harder than about 92 miles an hour. So even with great pinpoint control and command and, you know, having a five pitch arsenal where his stuff moves all over the place is fantastic. But when you're talking about major leaguers, they're going to catch up to 92 pretty quick. Here's the thing that a lot of people aren't talking about. MLB portion of the Rule 5 draft is $100,000. It's $100,000 you're paying for these players to be, you know, drafted and picked up as part of your club. And yes, you've got to, you know, find a roster spot for them. And they've got to play, I think it's like a minimum of 90 days and stay on the 40 man for the entirety of the season. But they have to play a minimum of like 90 days. He's coming off a season in which he missed a huge chunk of it because of a calf injury. We don't know for sure that calf injury is even healed 100% or in the right way, the way that you hope. You can actually start a guy on a long-term IL, right? And this might be the case with him. The White Sox might say, hey, you know what? That injury isn't quite healed. So we're gonna put him on the IL. We're gonna let him rehab. We're gonna let him try to figure it out. In the meantime, you know, he might be doing throwing programs. The White Sox pitching staff, or you know, coaching staff is gonna have time to work with him. Then we're gonna give him a shot. And like you said, keep him around for the minimum. But here's the thing: if it doesn't work out and he doesn't stay on the roster for that entirety of the time required, he can then go. He can be let go, and he has the opportunity to be bought back by the team he came from for $50,000. So if that were to happen, at most the White Sox lose $50,000. They give this kid with some high upside an opportunity. They lose $50,000. Now, if both teams decide they don't want to take a crack at him, they're out $100,000. Maybe he goes on to figure it out later on in his career and he comes back up with somebody else. But right now it's taking a big swing at very little risk. Right. And it, you know, maybe not the same level, but the other pitcher they picked up, and I'll go ahead and let you talk about him a little bit.
Yeah. This is Bannister's type of guy. Insane amount of extension and fastball slider. This screams bullpen arm, 6'8". The fastball is insane. It's 101 and it moves like crazy. And he's got a good slider to back it up. He needs to develop a third pitch. He throws he doesn't throw a third pitch as of now. I don't think maybe that has changed. I could be wrong. I didn't see anything. But yeah, fastball slider, 6'8", tons of extension. Like, that's what he's doing. Another guy, though, that hasn't pitched above high A. Like, they are taking...
Yeah, near 7 foot, though? With right extension? Whew.
Right. So they... Alberto has a 70-grade fastball, whereas Pius has 70 grade control. They are just betting on an insane tool and praying that they can develop everything around it and that they can make it work for a season in the big leagues. That's what they're attempting to do, and I love it. I think it's a really smart strategy.
Yeah, it's a big swing on a talent that it really isn't going to cost you much if it doesn't work out. His biggest you know, if in his game is going to be command. You know, the White Sox have kind of like that taller guy who can extend and put the ball on you rather quickly. And then, like you say, when you've got that full extension at 6'8", looking closer to 7 feet, and he's topped out at 101.4 miles an hour, dude's throwing babies, right?
Yeah.
Dude's throwing babies. There's potential there. If they can figure out the command, you know, that could end up being the steal of the Rule 5 draft. It was mentioned in their show. Again, I hate to keep bringing it up, but, you know, I knew we were going to run over the same ground because obviously we all have a lot of the same thoughts, and this is very recent. But this is a guy who, if he sticks, and you can find a way to keep him around for the entirety of the season and not give him, you know, back to free agency or the team that he came from, you have his control for the entirety of his rookie contract, and that could potentially be something that if the White Sox coaching staff can work something out with him, can be extremely dangerous.
Yeah, and that's my thought. This is too is like I would assume Bannister or somebody in the organization sees something that they can tweak, and that's why they selected him. I don't know. I just think that there's a shot. Again, these are, you know, Rule 5 picks. There should be zero expectations with these guys, but they're chances. And two pretty decent chances. Both are top 30 prospects. So I don't hate it. I like both the picks.
Yeah. Again, you know, you're taking big swings on guys with little experience that really doesn't cost you much. So I think it's a great strategy. I hope that either one, if not both, find it and stick. I mean, we could be looking at calling our guys genius if they do it 2 years in a row after what we saw with Shane Smith and Mike Vassell last year. We get a couple high A guys come out and become, you know, somebodies in an organization that's desperately hurting for somebodies, but you're going to have probably your best opportunities because of that. And because of the situation that they've been in, this is your opportunity to show out. So, I like the moves. I really do. And, of course, there was one more Rule 5 signing. Before we move on, I guess I should ask you if you have anything else you want to add to MLB guys. There was one more in the minor league portion of the draft. Did you get a chance to look at any of that, Jacob?
He's got a funky delivery. I don't know. I like it. He pitched really well. He's got a really funky delivery, though. I kind of enjoy it. I don't know. Maybe he turns into something.
Yeah. That's about as best as you could put it. Obviously, doesn't have to be on the roster for the season because it is the minor league portion of the draft. I think that's just an opportunity to give a guy a chance in the White Sox organization. They must have saw something. This is a team where Bannister has put together his guys that he believes can develop and teach these guys something. We've seen over the last couple of years strategies kind of change since Bannister's come in, and I can only hope that he pulls the most out of them here in the future.
Yeah.
Spencer Knight, shout out, he says.
Shout out, yeah.
I'm sorry. So... yeah, he does look like a ton. Ian says the MILB guy looks like a ton of fun. It's funky, but I don't really know a ton about him. I think if anybody were to inform us of him, I would imagine it would be Ian and James. Those guys have their ear to the ground and everything. I know they've got some pretty big shows coming up with some pretty big guests, guys that are going to have the skinny on these types of players that we don't really know much about. So I'm going to go ahead and suggest that if you aren't already following them and listening to them weekly, you go ahead and do that. Anything else you would like to add before we wrap it up here, Jake?
I don't know. I will say this. It's Jackson Kelly, and it's Kelly spelled the exact same way that Jared Kelly spelled Kelly. So it's having two J and then odd name spelled.
With the EY.
I don't know. I thought that was interesting to have kind of a. It's rare that you see a last name Kelly spelled like that, but interesting that J. Kelly twice.
Cool. So I guess we're at that portion of the show, hot takes and heaters. I will go ahead and offer up my hot take is just the Pope. Again, keeps coming up a lot on this show. The Pope again has put in some goodwill with the big guy upstairs, and the White Sox earned themselves the very first time since the draft lottery began. The team with the highest odds of getting the first pick actually got the first pick. So that's my hot take, or that's my heater for today. You got a heater or a hot take for us today, Jake?
I don't know if it's a hot take, but Chalosky is definitely going to add an S. I don't know. There's going to be about 50% of a White Sox fandom that it's going to be Chalosky's. 100%. 100%.
We need to have, you know what we need to do is we need a bakery to come up with like some kind of pastry and just call them Cholaskis. Like the cousin of the Kolachki.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, like Ditka. He's a good Polish kid, as Ditka would say. So, yeah. I saw that on Twitter yesterday too. Made me laugh a little bit. I found that interesting. Southside Jeff, what's going on, brother? Good to see you. He says, best hit the closest Catholic church and drop some bucks in the collection plate to help the cause. I couldn't agree more. I think good things are happening really quickly. So we've been talking Sox all day. I'm just, tell me if you agree with me or not. You might be a little young to remember the feeling that I had, but 20 years ago, 2005, the 05 White Sox had won the World Series. The Fighting Illini went through the college tournament bracket in some crazy fashion, won some comeback victories. Unfortunately, they lost in the championship game, but it was a ride to remember, right? The Chicago Bulls were playing better basketball than they had been in a while. The 05 Bears and Rex Grossman take us to a Super Bowl appearance in January of 06. Do you get the feeling now, like watching what's going on with the White Sox? We're a couple years away still, but things are on the up and up, right, in the White Sox organization. The Bulls started out the season hot and kind of, you know, fallen flat a little bit. There's been some injuries and some other things, but they did look better. The Blackhawks have one of the best young cores in hockey. And the Chicago Bears are playing above expectations already as it is in just the first year of the Ben Johnson era. What's going on, man? Is the Pope really, is he mailing in some, you know, is he calling in some favors?
There's no way it's a coincidence. It's just like randomly the Pope's from Chicago and everything turns around. There's no shot.
There's a lot of things happening that nobody saw coming. That's all I'm saying.
Ben Johnson chooses the job here.
Could have went anywhere.
Right. And he chose Chicago. I don't know.
I don't think anybody picked the Bears to be 9 wins at this point in the season. Most folks didn't have more than 10 wins or even less, you know, for the entirety of the season. Hawks looking like they're playoff bound for the first time in a while. And, you know, they're probably not going to go very deep, but looking like they're playoff bound, and they've got a ton of young talent waiting in the wings coming up.
Yeah, they've got like 3 times the farm system than the Sox do. That's insane.
I mean, let's.
That wasn't a shot at the White Sox. The Blackhawks farm system is legitimately insane.
It is. All right, let's. I guess we got a couple of commenters. We'll go ahead and hit some of these. Dope Man checks in late. Thanks for checking in, man. We're about to wrap it up, but we'll hang out for just a minute here. He says, "Hear me out. If they fall in love with either Jacob Lombard or Emerson, they take an underslot at 1 and float 3 first round talents."
I don't think you're insane. I get it. I mean, it's a reasonable take. It depends on what Cholowski does, though. If he wins like back to back National Player of the Year, I think you go with him. I don't know. I think you take the closest thing you're going to have to a superstar. I think Emerson's really good too. So I don't hate
that. I agree. It's going to be very difficult. Again, we said it earlier in the show. We'll say it one last time. Rock is, I mean, he's head and shoulders above everybody else. I know. Don't count out Emerson. Don't count out LeBron. Don't count out, you know, Lombard. I get it, but unless something drastically happens, it's going to be Rock, right? Yeah. So, you know, we'll kind of follow along as the college season goes on. We've got a long time till July, till mid-July when this thing happens. So, you know, just keep an open mind is all I'll say, but it's Rock. It's Rock right now. It's Rock. So, and they'll still be able to save some underslot money as well. They'll still be able to save some money for guys later on. Should be able to float at minimum a second first round talent. Right.
Agree.
All right. Well, I think we're going to wrap it up there. We've done our hot takes and heaters. We appreciate you guys for taking some time out during this absolutely awesome week. We hope it is not the highlight of the off season for the White Sox this last, the last day or two here, but it's looking like it might be. But as things go, we will keep you informed. We will be here every Wednesday at 8 p.m., God willing. If you guys enjoy the content, do us all a big favor for any of our shows. Go ahead and smash that like button. Subscribe if you're not already doing it. We appreciate our super chatters. Big shout out to Emilio with a couple of them tonight. And big shout out to all of our podcast downloaders as well and our listeners who aren't watching us live. We appreciate all you guys. You guys check out all our other shows. We've got James and Ian, who did a show just the other day. We also have Jeff and Elijah and Dylan, who do the roundup. The guys were awesome. They were on earlier tonight. Go check that out. And again, Super Chats are always open, so you guys check that out. Find us on Twitter. Follow for all of your favorite White Sox affiliate highlights. And, if you're into our written content, you can find that on www.futuresox.net. Until next time, for my co-host, Jacob Thome on X at jthome21, I am Danny Miller on X at dannymillerfs.com. We love and appreciate you guys. Hope you have a wonderful evening. And until next time, go White Sox.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.